Imagine, you are a pediatric nurse. It's like 2 o'clock in the morning. Your patient, an 8-year-old child, is critically ill with diabetic ketoacidosis, and their blood sugar is just crashing.
Right, a terrifying situation.
Exactly. So, to safely bring them out of this crisis, you have to stand at the bedside, pull out a piece of paper, and manually calculate this complex, constantly shifting ratio of intravenous fluids.
Yeah, well, you're exhausted.
Right. You're exhausted. You have like three other patients ringing their call buttons. And if your math is off by even a fraction, just a fraction, this child could suffer irreversible brain swelling.
And, that scenario, it's not an exaggeration.
Yeah.
I mean, it is the lived reality of how thousands of hospitals handle pediatric metabolic emergencies every single day.
It's wild to think about.
It really is. We basically rely on tired humans doing complex algebra in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
But that standard is fundamentally breaking, and the data we're looking at today proves it just no longer has to be this way.
Welcome to a case study edition of The Drip, brought to you by GlyTech. For today's deep dive, we're discussing the pediatric hyperglycemic crisis.
And our mission for you today, whether you're a hospitalist managing complex patient panels, a nursing leader trying to like stop frontline burnout, or even if you're sitting in the C-suite evaluating enterprise-wide liability, is to explore this massive shift happening in inpatient care.
Yeah, we're really looking at the critical transition from these outdated manual insulin protocols to, well, algorithmic FDA-cleared software.
Exactly. We're going to synthesize data from a 2026 white paper that details the clinical outcomes in pediatric hyperglycemic crises. And we'll look at that alongside GlyTech's internal commercial messaging framework.
Which is so important because this isn't just a clinical concern anymore. With changing CMS mandates, relying on manual protocols is now this, like, enterprise-wide financial and reputational risk. It alters the whole financial reality of a health system.
It absolutely does. But we need to start by looking at the clinical baseline. Right? Because you really can't understand the strategic solution until you grasp just how fragile the current standard of care actually is.
Right, the stakes are so high.
Extremely high. Let's look at pediatric diabetic ketoacidosis, or DKA. Just the volume alone is significant. We see approximately 13,600 pediatric DKA admissions in the U.S. every single year.
Wow, 13,600.
Yeah. And the standard of care in most hospitals for decades has been what we call the two-bag method.
Wait, I want to pause you right there because we need to unpack the mechanics of this for a second. When a child is in DKA, their blood sugar is dangerously high and their blood is acidic because of ketones, right?
Correct.
So why can't a clinician just, give them a standard continuous insulin drip until they're better?
Well, because it triggers a really dangerous physiological race. When you give continuous intravenous insulin to a patient in DKA, the insulin drives down the blood glucose levels much, much faster than it clears those toxic ketones from the blood.
Oh, I see. So the blood sugar normalizes, but the patient is still fundamentally in a state of ketoacidosis.
Precisely. And if you just keep running that insulin to clear the remaining ketones, you're going to drive the patient's blood sugar so low that they enter severe hypoglycemia.
Which is exactly what you're trying to avoid.
Exactly. So to prevent that from happening, the medical community came up with the two-bag method. You hang one bag of intravenous fluid that contains dextrose, which is, a sugar, and a second bag that does not contain dextrose.
Okay, so two separate bags.
Right. And as the continuous insulin infusion runs, that bedside nurse has to constantly recalculate and manually adjust the ratio of those two fluid bags to maintain a steady, safe rate of glucose correction while the ketones slowly clear out.
I mean, honestly, that sounds like trying to perfectly balance the water temperature in a shower using separate hot and cold knobs, but the water pressure in the building is just wildly fluctuating.
That's a great analogy.
You tweak the hot, it gets scalding, you panic and crank the cold, and suddenly you're freezing. Except in this case, we're asking a nurse who's juggling multiple critical patients to continuously run the math to prevent a total disaster.
That is a perfect way to visualize it. And the consequences of getting that balance wrong are devastating. If the nurse is delayed or the math is just slightly off, the patient swings into severe hypoglycemia. Or even worse, if the blood glucose levels are brought down too rapidly, it causes dangerous osmotic shifts.
Okay, let's take a step back for the listener. I know hypoglycemia is low blood sugar, but what exactly is an osmotic shift in this context?
So an osmotic shift happens when there's a sudden change in the concentration of sugar in the blood compared to the tissues. If the blood sugar drops too fast, water rapidly rushes out of the bloodstream and into the body's cells to balance things out.
Wow.
Yeah, and when that water rushes into brain cells, it causes cerebral edema, basically, brain swelling. is one of the most fatal complications in pediatric DKA. So treatment accuracy with the two-bag method relies entirely on nursing experience and staffing levels.
Neither of which are consistent across hospitals.
Exactly.
Which means we are treating a massive variation in care as if it's just a simple limitation of clinical skill, when in reality it's a structural systems failure. But if this two-bag method is so precarious and relies entirely on manual math, why has it been the accepted standard for decades?
Honestly. Because until recently, the technology to safely replace that human calculation at the bedside simply didn't exist, or at least wasn't cleared for pediatric use. But if the manual math is the fundamental point of risk, the logical next question is, well, what happens when we remove the math from the bedside entirely?
Right. What happens when we replace manual titration with a structured, weight-based dosing logic that just calculates all that the insulin, glucose, and fluid recommendations automatically?
Well, let's look at the evidence for that, because the data on algorithmic precision in these sources is, frankly, staggering.
Yeah, the 2026 SCCM data is pretty hard to ignore.
It really is. The 2026 Society of Critical Care Medicine data paints a very clear picture of this shift. We're looking at a massive retrospective evaluation of 1,372 pediatric DKA patients.
That's a huge sample size for this.
Huge. And these are patients ranging from 3 to 21 years old, who are managed with an algorithmic software called Glucomander the Feet. The outcomes of removing that manual math: 0% mortality.
Wait, 0%?
Zero, and near zero severe hypoglycemia, which is clinically defined as blood glucose dropping below 40 milligrams per deciliter.
I mean, a 0% mortality rate in a sample size of nearly 1,400 critically ill pediatric patients, that is not an incremental improvement. That is a complete elimination of the worst case scenario. How does the software actually achieve that? Is it just functioning as like a glorified calculator on an iPad?
No. It's vastly more sophisticated than a calculator. Glucomander achieves this through adaptive adjustment. The algorithm doesn't just look at a single blood sugar reading. It analyzes the current blood glucose levels, calculates the velocity or, the rate of change, and adjusts the recommended dose at regular intervals.
So it's actively tracking the trend.
Yes. And it also has built-in safety guardrails. If the algorithm detects that the glucose is dropping too fast, approaching that dangerous osmotic shift we just talked about, it proactively prevents the correction from exceeding safe threshold.
So it actually anticipates the crash before the crash even happens.
Precisely.
But I assume the clinician isn't just blindly following a machine, right?
Oh, absolutely not. Yeah. The clinician always remains at the center of care. The nurse reviews and confirms every single recommendation before making any change to the IV drip. So clinical judgment is completely preserved, but the massive cognitive burden of performing the math, that is entirely absorbed by the software.
That makes so much sense.
And just for context, Glucomander is currently the only software FDA cleared as a Class 2 medical device for pediatric patients ages 2 and older.
Okay, a 0% mortality rate in a massive study is incredible. But a skeptical chief medical officer is going to look at this and question the scalability. I mean, it's one thing to run a highly sophisticated algorithmic protocol at a quaternary academic medical center, right?
Sure, with all their resources.
Exactly. A massive top-tier research hospital with a dedicated pediatric ICU and specialized pediatric endocrinologists on staff. It's an entirely different reality to run this in a rural 100-bed community hospital. Are those smaller facilities actually equipped to implement this?
The white paper makes a fascinating point about exactly that gap. Algorithmic dosing actually reduces the need for costly and risky patient transfers from those smaller facilities.
Really? How so?
Well, historically, when a child presents in DKA at a community hospital without a pediatric endocrinologist on staff, the standard response is to initiate the two-bag protocol and immediately arrange an emergency helicopter or ambulance transfer to a tertiary center.
Because the community hospital knows they just don't have the specialized staff to safely manage the manual math if things go south.
Exactly that. But when you deploy FDA-cleared algorithm-based insulin management software directly into the community hospital's electronic health record, you are providing those frontline clinicians with academic-level, evidence-based dosing support right at the bedside.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. They have the guardrails they need to treat the patient safely in-house.
So nurses are no longer terrified of making a fatal math error, which means the community hospital doesn't have to transfer the patient out. I mean, that completely changes hospital throughput.
It really does.
The community hospital retains the patient safely, keeping that care local, and the massive academic center frees up their pediatric ICU beds for other severe traumas. That logical progression perfectly bridges the conversation from individual patient safety to, like, hospital-wide operational efficiency.
And that operational impact on the clinical workforce is where you see the immediate cultural shift on the floor. Let's look at the documented outcomes from AdventHealth Waterman.
Yeah, those numbers were crazy.
After implementing algorithmic management, they saw a 75% reduction in first-time calls to providers regarding insulin, a 30% drop in time spent on insulin management. They saw a 54% reduction in wrong dose ordering. And crucially, time and motion studies showed this software is saving up to 72 minutes per nurse per IV insulin patient per shift.
Okay, wait. Walk me through what a nurse's actual 72 minutes of manual math looks like during a shift. What is taking up over an hour of their time?
Well, under manual protocols, when blood sugar reading comes back, the nurse has to leave the room, hunt down the specific paper protocol binder for that unit.
Which is probably never where it's supposed to be.
Exactly. Then they perform the complex calculation to figure out the new trip rate, find a second nurse to independently verify the math and Jules sign the chart, and then potentially page the attending hospitalist for an override if the patient's physiology is acting unpredictably. Then they wait for a call back. And this is all while alarms are sounding down the hall.
That is just, that's chaos. And the software entirely eliminates that scavenger hunt. 72 minutes recovered for a single nurse on a single shift is monumental. That is an hour of focused clinical attention given back to the patient. It completely explains why the data shows a 90 to 100% nursing satisfaction rate across deployed sites.
Right. The clinical team actually supports the workflow change because it gives them their time and their judgment back. But, you know, for a long time, hospitals just accepted that nursing burnout and manual math errors were the unavoidable cost of doing business. And what forced this to suddenly become an urgent C-suite problem?
The regulatory landscape completely shifted. CMS, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, implemented the ECQM mandate.
Let's unpack ECQM for a second, because we hear that acronym thrown around boardrooms constantly. What does electronic clinical quality measure actually mean for a CFO or a hospital administrator?
Essentially, it's a digital standard that CMS uses to track and measure the quality of care provided by hospitals. And here's the kicker. Severe hypoglycemia and severe hyperglycemia are now officially categorized as hospital harm ECQMs.
Meaning they're not just internal issues anymore.
Exactly. They're no longer just internal quality metrics discussed quietly in morbidity and mortality conferences. They are electronically measured, they are publicly reportable, and they are directly tied to federal reimbursement.
So the era of burying a hypoglycemic event in a paper chart is over.
Completely over. And CMS is enforcing this aggressively. They're tying these specific metrics to a 25% forfeiture of the annual Medicare payment update for non-reporting.
Wow, 25%.
Yeah. So if you're a CFO or a CEO listening to this, you really have to ask yourself, isn't sticking with manual paper protocols essentially volunteering for a massive financial penalty? Every month, a hospital continues to rely on a nurse doing algebra at 2 a.m. The exposure to that compounding CMS penalty just grows.
And, avoiding those CMS penalties is critical risk mitigation, right? But the actual data reveals a secondary financial layer. Algorithmic management doesn't just prevent penalties, it creates massive proactive financial returns. We're talking about documented hard dollar avoided costs driven by getting patients healthy and out of the hospital faster.
And, you know, CFOs live and die by defensible numbers, not just projected theory. So let's look at the actual balance sheets. Riverside Healthcare documented $2.6 million in annualized avoided costs. That represents a 467% return on investment.
That's massive.
And Kauai Delta documented an astounding $9.7 million in annualized savings. And the white paper notes that $7.1 million of that came exclusively from the reduction in hypoglycemic events.
Well, it makes sense when you look at the throughput data. Across all deployments, the software drives a 3.18-day average reduction in length of stay.
Over 3 days.
Yeah. Because when a patient avoids a severe hypoglycemic crash, they don't need to spend an extra 3 days recovering in a high-cost ICU bed.
But, you know, a resourceful IT director might look at these numbers and say, hey, we already pay millions for our electronic health record system like Epic or Cerner. Why can't I just have my in-house IT team build a basic insulin calculator directly into the EHR?
Well, we can just build an in-house argument. It's incredibly common, but the data shows those homegrown or EHR native tools simply do not deliver clinical superiority. In head-to-head comparisons, Glytek's algorithmic management resulted in a 17.6% shorter length of stay compared to DIY Epic calculators.
Wait, what does that look like in days?
That's 5.4 days of hospital time versus 6.5 days. And at an enterprise scale across thousands of admissions, that difference in throughput represents millions of dollars in capacity.
And we really have to ground that financial return in safety realities. How does a DIY tool differ fundamentally from an FDA-cleared algorithmic software?
It comes down to medical device safety standards. Continuous the AC insulin is widely considered the second most dangerous drug in the hospital. Glucomander has a 20-year history as an FDA-cleared Class 2 software as a medical device, with zero FDA recalls. The closest point tool competitor, EndoTool, has a record of 3 FDA recalls, one in 2010 and 2 in 2019. You just cannot build a defensible financial business case on top of a tool that is structurally vulnerable to recalls or clinical errors.
Which naturally leads us to the most disruptive part of Glytek's commercial messaging framework, the value-based partnership. They're basically moving away from traditional software licensing and toward an outcomes-linked structure. They operate on a philosophy of zero events or zero invoice, where payment is actually tied to documented outcomes against an established baseline.
Because traditionally, software vendors invoice a hospital regardless of the clinical outcome. You pay the annual licensing fee for the software, whether your severe hypoglycemia rates drop by 50% or don't move at all.
Exactly. So let me put on my skeptical CFO hat for a minute. CFOs are notoriously allergic to projected ROI. Every software vendor walks into the boardroom with a beautiful spreadsheet showing millions in projected savings that somehow never actually materialize on the hospital balance sheet a year later.
Of course.
So how does this value-based partnership structurally bound the downside risk for a hospital system compared to a traditional vendor? If I'm signing this contract, how do I know I'm not just buying another empty promise? Well, actually, looking at the data, the mechanism that bounds the risk lies in the guarantee tiers.
Right, the three tiers.
Yeah, Glytek offers platform, oversight, and ownership. In the entry-level platform tier, the hospital still owns the clinical operating model. But in the oversight and ownership tiers, the accountability physically and contractually shifts to the vendor. In the ownership tier, Glytek takes end-to-end accountability for the glycemic operating model and the documented clinical outcomes. Their earnings literally depend on whether the hospital hits the agreed-upon targets.
So the vendor's financial incentive is perfectly structurally aligned with the hospital's clinical outcome. They only earn their full payment by eliminating the harm.
Exactly.
So when you align the clinical evidence of 0% mortality in pediatric DKA, the operational efficiency of giving nurses 72 minutes back per shift, and the financial safety net of a vendor putting their own revenue on the line, hospital administrators are facing a clear point of no return.
So what does this all mean for the leaders listening? I think the core actionable insight here is that manual protocols are no longer just, you know, the way we do things. They are a documented, measurable, and financially penalizing liability.
Absolutely. The definition of a good glycemic outcome has shifted. It's gone from a clinical hope to a governed, reportable, and contractually guaranteed enterprise result.
And your peers have already set the standard. We aren't talking about theoretical benchmarks that might be achievable in a vacuum. Genesis Healthcare documented a 99.8% reduction in severe hypoglycemia. And Centara documented a 57% reduction scaled across 12 different hospitals, proving that this level of algorithmic control holds firm at a massive multi-facility enterprise level. Choosing to stick with sliding scale insulin or paper protocols today is like choosing to fly a commercial airliner without radar when every other airline has it.
That's a great way to put it.
You might land safely, but the exposure to risk is entirely on you. And when the data shows that your peers have already adopted the safety systems, claiming that manual flying is just how we've always done it is no longer a defensible position.
Thanks for joining us today on The Drip, a Glytek podcast production. For the full white papers and case studies discussed today, visit Glytek.com.
But before you go, consider this final provocative thought from the emerging research in the white paper. Think about the pediatric population under 2 years old. We're talking about infants with wildly unpredictable insulin sensitivity, elevated mortality risk, and devastating neurodevelopmental risks from glycemic instability.
Most vulnerable patients.
Exactly. If the early case series showing 0% severe hypoglycemia using algorithmic dosing in these infants holds true, how will expanding this technology to the absolute most vulnerable patients in the hospital redefine your institution's approach to metabolic emergencies in the next 5 years?